Hello again, and welcome to another edition of Authors Audio, where we interview authors from all around the world. I'm your host, Jake D. Steele. Today we have a very special guest, Dr. Helen Caldicott, who has devoted the last 35 years to writing, lecturing, and educating the public about the great medical hazards of the nuclear age. Born in Melbourne, Australia in 1938, Dr. Caldicott received her medical degree from the University of Adelaide Medical School in 1961. While living in the United States from 1977 to 86, she co-founded the Physicians for Social Responsibility, an organization of 23,000 doctors committed to educating their colleagues about the dangers of nuclear power. The Smithsonian Institute has named Dr. Caldicott as one of the most influential women of the 21st century. She has authored 7 books. Her latest 2 books are Nuclear Power is Not the Answer and War in Heaven, March 2007. So it is my great pleasure to welcome to Authors Audio Dr. Helen Caldicott. Hello, Helen. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Jake.
You've been writing and teaching and lecturing about the dangers of nuclear energy for, I believe, about 35 years now. And yet, the drama play that we've been plagued with in the human race since the dreadful days of 1945 just seems to be getting worse, not better. It seems now even more that the human race is getting to be comfortable living under a kind of Valium sleep with this horrible, dangerous nuclear energy, nuclear weapons right above our heads. Nobody seems to be watching except for you and a few other people. First of all, what's the score sheet and where are we now after over 60 years since 1945?
Well, I think the human race is bent on a suicidal mission. I can't describe it in any other way.
Yes.
And I think I would go back to Albert Einstein, who so long ago said, prophetically, the splitting of the atom changed everything save man's mode of thinking. Thus we drift towards unparalleled catastrophe. So during the crazy, crazy Cold War, America built 77,000 nuclear weapons, mostly hydrogen bombs, when 1,000 bombs exploding over 100 cities could cause nuclear winter and the end of life on Earth. So they built 77 times that amount to destroy life on the planet. The Russians blindly and stupidly copied and followed. They didn't build quite as many, but they built a fair number. Now, when the Cold War ended, everyone thought, well, that's it. They'll get rid of the weapons. Well, the truth is they have not. And that Russia and America still target each other with thousands of nuclear weapons well above the threshold for nuclear winter, which are on hair trigger alert, which take half an hour to reach their target. Every ton seen Russia, America, Canada, Europe, China, England, Japan, and Australia is targeted with at least one bomb. But there is such a redundancy of weapons that there are 40 hydrogen bombs targeted as I speak on New York City, 60 on D.C., and probably almost certainly 60 on Moscow. These weapons are on hair trigger alert, ready to be launched with a 3-minute decision time by Putin or Bush. On 9/11, they got to the second or third highest state of nuclear alert, STRATCOM 2 or 3, ready to launch the weapons.
Wow.
And they stay on hair trigger alert despite the fact that Russia and America are friends. So the true rogue nations in the world, rogue nations, are Russia and America, who own 97% of the 30,000 nuclear weapons in the world. They are holding the world at nuclear ransom, and no one has the courage, the guts, the initiative to take on either of these countries. So we are in a suicidal state. There is lateral proliferation, it's true. I mean, Israel has the third largest nuclear arsenal in the world, many say. She did not sign the NPT. She will neither confirm nor deny she has them. And, of course, she's surrounded by hostile states, all of whom want their own bombs. because she set up the model. Pakistan and India did not sign the NPT, Non-Proliferation Treaty.
No.
Pakistan is in a terrible state of disarray. If Mashar goes, there are 50 hydrogen bombs which could be taken over by the Taliban. China's got weapons, only 20 bombs that could hit America. In fact, she's way behind, and France has weapons, and so has Britain. Although Britain has recently started calling for nuclear disarmament. So everyone blindly and stupidly, in a masculine testosterone fashion, wants to copy America and Russia. So they all want their own bombs. Meanwhile, at the same, and so we live under the sword of Damocles, twisting over our heads every second of every day. We get close to nuclear war many times, often several times a day. I don't know how we're still here. Meanwhile, back at the farm, the nuclear power industry has gone burko and wants to build nuclear reactors left, right and centre all over the world. Nuclear power in itself increases global warming to a substantial degree because it's underpinned by a huge industrial infrastructure which produces massive quantities of global warming gas. It is so expensive, it's a socialised industry, paid for fully by the federal governments of France, Britain, America, China and the like. Can't stand alone, it's on its own feet in a state where there is overt and rampant capitalism or in the free market economy. But the nuclear power industry says in a lie that it's the answer to global warming and that it will build reactors left, right and centre. So we are on the path towards mutual annihilation, because any country that has a reactor has access to bomb material, which is plutonium, which is produced in a reactor. 500 pounds of plutonium made a year in each reactor, and you need only 10 pounds to make yourself a bomb. Actually, it's much less. It's more like 2.3 or 3 pounds. So as countries make their own bombs, that destabilizes the balance of terror between Russia and America, so that if there was a nuclear war that broke out, say, on the Indian subcontinent between Pakistan and India, the anxiety would be so high that it's very possible that Russia and America could also launch their weapons, and that's the end of life on Earth. So as I talk, the nuclear industry has its act on the stage with a backdrop of the nuclear weapons on hair trigger alert.
You know, there are two definite sides to this nuclear issue. It's the nuclear weapons, the depleted uranium tipped, as they called, shells, and there's also the whole nuclear energy production issue, which you have gone over very well in your book and described the true cost of developing nuclear energy, and that in fact it's not clean energy, right?
Well, it's not clean energy. I mean, at the moment, because of the industrial infrastructure to mine the uranium and enrich it and the like, and the amount of fossil fuel that's used in that, if you add up all of that material, a nuclear power plant produces 30% of the amount of CO2 as a similar sized gas-fired electricity generated plant. But within 1 or 2 decades, as the quality and concentration of high-grade uranium ore declines, so much fossil fuel and energy will be used to enrich the uranium that a nuclear power plant within 10 or 20 years will be creating the same amount of CO2 as a gas-fired plant. So you may as well just burn the fossil fuel, because you don't get the radioactive waste. Massive, massive quantities containing strontium-90 that lasts for 600 years, gets into the food chain, mimics calcium, causes bone cancer and leukemia. Cesium-137 lasting for 600 years causes brain cancers, muscle cancers and the like, gets into the gonads producing mutations in the eggs and sperm. Plutonium that lasts for 500,000 years causes lung cancer, liver cancer, bone cancer, leukemia, testicular cancer, kidney cancer, and crosses the placenta to damage the developing fetus. I mean, those are just three of the many isotopes in nuclear waste that is being produced every day by nuclear power plants. No one knows where to put this stuff, and as it leaks, which is presently doing, into our water supplies and bioconcentrates back in the food chain, by orders of magnitude, it will over time induce epidemics of malignancy, particularly in children who are radiosensitive, and genetic disease forevermore. That's, nuclear power is a carcinogenic industry. Like smoking and like asbestos, it is a carcinogenic industry.
Well, it's the whole idea of disposal of radioactive waste, which has half-lives of thousands of years. It's crazy. What are we going to do with this stuff? It's going to be radioactive for a very long time. And nobody has come to that point and said, oh, before we make this mess, let's find out how to clean it up. We're not there, right?
Well, that's an obvious question a four-year-old child would ask. And I've been debating with the blasted nuclear industry for 36 years, actually. And they say, well, trust us, we're good scientists. We'll find the cure to the storage of radioactive waste. They'll be dead soon. We're leaving it to generations hence, like hundreds or thousands of our descendants, generations. And I say to them, well, look, that's like me saying to you, you've got a cancer, you'll die in 6 months, but don't worry, I'm a good doctor and scientist. In 20 years' time, I'll find the cure, by which time you'll be long dead and buried, and so will I probably. There is no solution to the storage of radioactive waste over glacial time frames, geological time frames, the whole thing. There is no answer. All you do is move it from one site to the other. And how the nuclear industry has been able to get away with this myth and legend for so long absolutely eludes my brain. I don't understand why people buy into this.
It's beyond me. I've never been able to understand why, at this point in time that we know, I mean, people should know, a lot of them don't, what the real story is with nuclear weapons. It's just the end of the planet if we get going. And people should be marching in the streets saying, hey, look, enough. How long would it take to get rid of these weapons?
Oh, I think you could do it in 5 years, and there's a precedent for that. When Reagan and Gorbachev met in Reykjavik in Iceland in 1987, they almost agreed over 2 days to abolish nuclear weapons. And so we could easily do it. I would give it a five-year time frame. And Russia and America would decommission their weapons. That means undo them and take out the plutonium. Then you've got this stuff that lasts for 500,000 years, nowhere to put it, and it's so deadly, deadly toxic. Could be used by future generations to remake bombs if they so desired and were mad enough like we've been. But at least that could happen. And if Russia and America dismantled 97% of the arsenal of 30,000 bombs in the world, then all other countries would be forced, morally, legally, and obliged to follow their example. It's easy to do. I mean, if we get a decent president, like maybe Barack Obama, although he's for nuclear power because he's being funded by Exelon, but he's for abolition of nuclear weapons, or John Edwards, say, This could happen, because now Gordon Brown, today or yesterday, in Britain, has come out to call for abolition of nuclear weapons. So there is a movement now. You know, even that dreadful war criminal Henry Kissinger is calling for a similar situation.
it's unbelievable, isn't it?
So maybe all the work that we've done in the past is maybe about to bear fruit. Who knows?
Well, you have really been a force here in articulating, which is one of the most important things, is to articulate with education just what we're dealing with, because a lot of people don't know, and they're very busy, and they're going on, and you know, Helen, when I go to a new area or a new place on the planet, I ask people, where do you get your power? I don't see any waterfalls. Oh, I don't know.
No, nobody knows. But it's a good question. Nobody knows where the electricity comes from. I ask the same question when I travel too.
Which countries are doing the best to de-escalate the use of nuclear power, nuclear weapons?
Well, I've just been at a conference to advise the Prime Minister of Spain. And he is against nuclear weapons, and within 2 years, he will be heading the EU, which is becoming more and more powerful. And Spain has a very big influence on the emerging Latin American countries, the independents, and many of them are now. So I think that his influence in the world could be really quite marked over the years, and that's why I went to sort of brief him and the Spanish government about nuclear weapons. They've got 8 nuclear power plants, and he says he'll close them down at the end of their working life. Well, they should be shut down now, and I told him that. But he refused to accept that notion. Germany is going well along the paths of renewable energy, and will close down its nuclear power plant shortly. Denmark has none. Sweden does, but she had 2 major accidents recently and got a hell of a fright. They came to within in 2 minutes in one of her reactors of a major meltdown like Chernobyl. What I would say is that the next major meltdown, be it in Europe or America, Canada or the US, will mark the end of nuclear power. That'll be it. So with hundreds or thousands of people dying of acute radiation illness and, you know, being committed to developing cancer years to come, that will, I think, freak everyone out. In terms of nuclear weapons, I'm interested in the movement now that's happening, led by George Shultz, who was at Reykjavik with Reagan and Gorbachev, who is talking about actually abolition of nuclear weapons for the first time. He's drawn in Bill Perry, former Secretary of Defense, Sam Nunn, former senator, and Henry Kissinger. Meanwhile, in Britain, Gordon Brown, apparently, I've just read this, is calling for abolition of nuclear weapons, and they've got quite a large arsenal in Britain. So it seems like the tide might be turning. There may be a sea change, particularly on weapons, not on power yet. And I think Canada has a major role to play in this. A, Canada is part of NORAD and part of the first strike nuclear war policy conducted by the United States. And she goes along with it. B, Canada sells uranium all over the world and she must stop because by selling uranium, you're selling cancer. And C, Canada sells CANDU reactors around the world, which are terribly dangerous and make absolutely pure plutonium, which can be used for weapons. And indeed, I think the bomb made in India was from a CANDU reactor. So you have a lot on your plate. You have to close down your nuclear power plants in Canada. You must stop uranium mining and you must not build any more nuclear power plants or sell them abroad because that's really wicked and immoral from a medical perspective.
Well, okay. Now, the question most people would say, ask you is, how do we maintain the same level of energy demand and get rid of the reactors? What do we replace that with, you know?
Okay, well, first of all, the energy demand is really out to lunch. I mean, we've got everything in our houses, all blinking lights, our dishwasher, our washing machine, our DVDs, our VCRs, the whole thing. Those all should be turned off at night. They suck out 6% of the electricity out of the grid. That we can easily save, or Americans, the US, can save 28% of the electricity it currently uses by such conservation methods. Now, I've produced with a man called Dr. Arjun Makajani in Washington a roadmap for a carbon-free, nuclear-free energy future, and that means transport as well as electricity, by the year 2050 for the US. Carbon-free and nuclear-free. How do you do that? Well, you tax carbon to the tune of $40 a ton. At the moment, industry uses our atmosphere as a sewage system and just dumps this stuff in the atmosphere. They have to be charged. That will cause them to look for alternative methods of generating power. And B, if you stop subsidising nuclear power, the plants will die a natural death because they're totally supported. They're a socialised industry. Now, this roadmap, which you can download by going to ieer.org, download the roadmap for carbon-free nuclear-free future consists of the latest technologies in solar power, storage of electricity into power using solar energy, wind power and storage of energy, covering all the parking lots in the United States with solar panels, using vehicle-to-grid cars where you plug in your Prius into the power supply from solar power during the day, and then you drive it home at night and plug the car into your house using its charged batteries, and you get your power for your house from your car. It's called vehicle-to-grid, V2G. There are many new techniques being developed for bioenergy, not corn, because you come out with a net energy loss growing corn, but using algae, water hyacinths, switchgrass and other such things, which can, A, use the CO2 produced from plants that are generating electricity using fossil fuels for their photosynthesis, B, growing like fury, these algae, and C, they then can be turned into alcohol and be used for enormous amounts of energy for transportation. I would advise you to go to the roadmap to look at this. We deal also with geothermal energy in Canada. You have a lot of that. Just below the surface of the earth, it's quite warm, so you can plug into that heat and use it for heating your houses and cooling them during the summer. But that also can be used
in today's world. Really, what I'm seeing is that the technology in terms of, you know, better batteries, they're just on the curve. They're starting to build these really amazing solar cells that I don't think are silicon-based, and they're very efficient. So you're advocating a idea that is more personal and central development of energy from wind and sun, and using your own energy instead of the...
No, it really is more to do with industry, this and cities and the like. Certainly it can be personal by putting a solar panel on your house and becoming energy independent and having your own windmill. But this is much bigger. This is taking up the whole grid of electricity for America and the whole transportation system, not just personal, because that won't fix it. It's got to be national and state-based, and this is the prescription for survival. It's been thoroughly costed out economically, and the technology is here now. So the only thing that's holding up this renewable energy scenario are the politicians who are bought and sold by the big oil companies, the big coal companies, and the big nuclear companies. Just look at the money. I mean, Barack Obama is being heavily funded by Exelon, a huge nuclear energy industry company. Hillary Clinton takes huge amounts of money from the military-industrial complex. So you have to know they're basically corporate prostitutes. And what we must do in our democracies is use our democracies and say to our politicians, you will not get elected unless you do what we want you to and we tell you to, because you represent us, you do not represent the corporations. And that's true in Canada as well. So you need to get off your bottoms, off your couches, and use your own internal human energy to save the planet. So we have the prescription for survival. And in fact, the three main issues facing the world today, which could cause destruction of most life on the planet, nuclear war, and that can be fixed by global nuclear disarmament, and Canada can play an important and vital role in that. Closing down nuclear power plants all over the planet, Canada can lead in that area. And the third is to create renewable energy sources for transportation and electricity, and we have that. So we have the solutions, in fact, to the three main problems that face the planet.
Oh, we do have the solutions now. I've seen them myself, and they're not somewhere off in the future. They're here right now, Helen.
They're here right now.
That is the greatest thing. You don't have to point to some imaginary technology. It's here. And, you know, so someone like yourself that has been on the march for over 35 years to to bring the gospel, if you will, to people is just invaluable, and you've done that in your life. And all I can say is that we need more of you. And listeners, if you're listening, as Helen says, get off your duffs and get on down to your parliament buildings or your Washington or wherever the heck you are and start to raise some hell about this.
Yeah, raise hell.
Not gonna change.
And read the book. Read my book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer to Global Warming. Download the roadmap for a carbon-free, nuclear-free future at IEER.org. And then just take over your parliament. You know, these politicians are scientifically and medically ignorant, and they need to be educated by you.
Yes, and I just want to tell everybody that, again, Helen Caldicott, Caldicott, her latest book is Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. You've heard it from her personally here, what the story is. And if you'd like your families to continue to exist on this lovely little green-blue planet, it's time to take action now. And Helen, you've got a website, right?
Yes, I've got two websites. One is called helencaldicott.com, one word, helencaldicott.com.
Okay.
The other is called nuclearfree.org.
Nuclearfree.org and helencaldicott.com, that's easy. Okay, and the book again is Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. Go out and get the book because she has covered every little thing, the history of this and where we are going and where we could be going and where we have to go in order to sidestep a major worldwide catastrophe. So Helen Caldicott, I'd like to thank you so much for taking time today to be with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, Helen. See you the next time. And
okay.
we're behind you 100%.
Good. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Helen.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And once again, I'd like to thank everyone for dropping by Authors Audio. Today we had Helen Caldicott, and her two latest books are Nuclear Power is Not the Answer and War in Heaven. So make sure you get out and get those books, and you'll really be up to date on what we need to do as a planet to get by this crucial time. And so this is Jake D. Steele saying keep dreaming and happy reading. Until next time, bye for now.